Welcome to the We Leaders podcast, where leaders share how to leave a legacy that makes history. I'm your host, Elena Fulvio. As a 13-time world record-holding skydiver and Olympic development athlete, psychic intuitive, and former Silicon Valley in-house talent advisor for some of the most legendary leaders and successful companies in history, there is a new bar being set for leadership. They're called We Leaders. What this means for you on this show, We Leaders will show up for you and bring their unapologetic truth, most successful strategies and mindsets so you can level up. We share from our shoes so you can walk in them. Here, the only rules are authenticity, respect, and being in service of every human having the lives they want. Join the movement. Welcome to the We Leaders podcast. Now let's go make history. I'm so excited to have this time that I have my friend, Mike Vacanti, and I'm so excited to share him with you, to actually have him share his life's journey and take note of his words and his ideas about how you can cause yourself from the inside out to be the best possible leader. He has this incredible organization called the Humans First Club, which I'll let him explain more about, but it is globally impacting the world of humans, not just leaders, on how to come together and cause the world to be not just a better place, but abundant for all. And he really brings his life in and infuses the heart of organizations and causes it from the inside out. He's also the author of Believership, which you can see right behind him. He's an absolute amazing human, and I'm so excited for him to be a part of this, to be a guest today. I'm honored and I'm so excited for us to talk about the profitable leader and how to do culture and how to cause teams of successful people together through your lens. So thank you for being here today. I really am so excited to have you share.
Yeah, you know how much fun it is for me jumping in and starting the conversation with you. It was hard to hit record, right? Because yeah. We just have so much fun. I just enjoy the love and the energy that you bring to the world, right?
Thank you.
You're opening up ideas, you're opening minds, and you're opening hearts to explore what's really possible in front of us.
Yeah.
We don't have to perpetuate the past, right? We can reinvent this thing and just take forward what we really want to move forward with.
Right. We do have a powerful choice in that.
Yeah. I like that lighter load, right? It's kind of like packing the pack correctly.
Yes. Getting rid of what we don't need so it's not so heavy, keeping what we do and moving forward powerfully. I agree. And never better a time than now or ever. Every moment is the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, and it's an interesting time because there's a forced recalibration. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of words people are using, right? And I don't necessarily like saying pause, although it's nice that when things slow down, reflect a little bit, but there's definitely a recalibration
with
the workforce. I think people are looking at their values.
100%.
And that creates such a wonderful opportunity to, you know, when we think about the profitable leader, the sustainable profitable leader will know that if they can create value in themselves and within others, they'll go much further.
Yeah.
Extracting value for a short period of time from others or sacrificing their own soul or themselves to get to a short-term gain and end up with maybe the money, but not the fulfillment.
Right.
That's not where we want to go. How do those things align? So we're climbing in the profits and we're becoming fulfilled. Yeah. I believe that's possible. And we've kind of been told we have to choose. And I think that's old thinking we can discard and re-envision.
Yeah, I agree. And you said a word, sacrificing. I think a lot of people think I have to either sacrifice my leadership because I'm vulnerable and I give to my people or the people that I partner with in life, or I have to sacrifice them to get what I want. There is no sacrifice. Like you're saying, it's how do we take ownership of who we are like what you're saying, is how do we pivot, how we take ownership of who we are right now in this moment, regardless of what moment, and take ownership of how we impact others to move forward as a global unit, as a team, as all that, as leaders, as our own individual leaders outward.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And we think of, you know, how we show up and showing up authentically, right? And yeah. And that becomes the big challenge for people is I need to appear that I'm in control. I need to appear that I am not under stress. And
right.
In reality, be under stress and show how you are when you're stress tested.
Right.
Like, wow, this is pressuring me and I don't feel like I'm making decisions as quickly and as assuredly. So I'd like some opinion from all of you.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wow, they're inviting me in. If you don't show them your humanity, if you don't show people your own questioning, your own vulnerability, your willingness to understand your own kind of shortcomings at times or your flaws, they're going to look around. They're going to find them all on their own.
Exactly.
Or maybe they even create those cracks.
Oh, exactly. They will find them. They will or create them, or they'll just leave and let them be cracks, you know? So to your point, I think really leaders want their people to be vulnerable. Like you're saying, they want them to be open. They want them to be authentic, but it takes them showing up that way authentically for them to have a company that's like that. And even for them to have the world around them to be like that, right? Is they need to show up in that space for there to be that space. So whatever business they see happening, whatever success happens or not, is what they've produced.
You know, the conversations we've had, I look back and it's, you've shown that strength in your own life, right? To take on that responsibility of others, to be strong enough to hold their burden, to understand their pain and be strong enough not to blame, not to project, not to pressure it back onto others, but actually be strong enough as a leader to hold the burden and the pain of others.
Right, right.
Well, you have to be in tune enough and close enough in that relationship to know what that pain is, to know what that burden is, because it's not going to be the same for each person.
Right. Speak to that in terms of your background. Like, tell us your story. And one reason why I love you is because you don't just speak it, you are it, right? I don't do people that just speak it, right? Because that's not someone that I trust in, that I will follow, because I can't believe in what they do, because what they say is different, right? You show up speaking it, but you also act it. So share your story about how you got to there. I'm sure you were probably born this way, because I think you're absolutely amazing anyway. But how did your journey go where you came to believership and you focused on this magical organization that you've created, but you've had to show up in that light? Was there pivoting moments? Were there, you know, messes to successes, failures? Like, how did you show up like this?
Yeah, there were a lot of, you know, there are a lot of you know, if it's a maze that we make our way through as we learn, right, then there's a lot of dead ends, right? And so, you know, people talk about hitting the, they talk about seeking failure, and I don't believe that, right? I don't think you actually go out and seek failure because it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I think you accept it as a temporary diversion, so you have to change course.
Right.
Like if you're walking through a maze, you're going to hit a dead end, but you're still moving through the maze.
Right.
You can't like break down and you know, wither at that end point. You kind of pivot, you turn around, you keep going. And I did that. So I grew up in an entrepreneurial business. I was in the family sporting goods business since I was a teenager, working in the factory, and I learned a lot about manufacturing and protective equipment for athletics. And then, you know, I made the stuff. So it was, I knew foam density and plastic molding. And, I learned, inventory systems and biology and load impact to, you know, separate shoulders or cause deep contusions or break bones.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a lot of, stuff that, that I learned, and I didn't think much about it because I was just doing what I loved to do. It was family business, and I knew it. And then I was out in my 20s. I sold that. So I entertained professional athletes for a living, is what I tell people. But I had, you know, 52 reps across the U.S. and Canada, and when, you know, I was on the road most of the time, city to city, rep to rep, stores, and so I. You know, my whole life was about people and relationships. It's just what I did. I didn't think hard about the business side of it.
Yeah. If I can interject one thing, you said that it's protective gear, right?
Yeah.
So for athletes, so what I triggered into when you said that, and you said you didn't even think about it in terms of like that you were selling and you had these relationships, you were providing something that was going to be a support to their life, to something that they wanted to do by offering them a solution, which was the protective gear to ensure that they could do their sport. Like the football players, like athletes, they get hit hard. They can't, they can't risk getting bones broken. They can't risk that. So you're providing something that actually ensures that they can continue to do what they want by using protective gear or implementing or using something outside of their human form into that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's such a wonderful point. And actually there was a big value proposition in that. So as you know, we were working with professional teams, think of their inventory, their asset base is their, you know, $1 million a year athletes. Yeah. You kind of want to keep them healthy.
Yeah.
And, so the equipment was paramount. And I often got called in after somebody was injured to build custom equipment for that injured area, which was always
interesting.
Fun. You know, but then that, that series of events with that company, it ended up, you know, the board of directors split up, it went into a proxy battle. So I kind of got that whole business, experience of lawyers and people at the board level, you know, kind of wrestling for control of a company. And, I walked away from it and I decided I wanted to go into advertising.
Interesting.
In my late 20s. And so, you know, people in advertising are saying, Mike, you don't have the degree for this and you're too old and you don't have this experience. It's like, great, give me, you know, three names of people and I'll leave your office. And they did. And so in 6 weeks, I had 14 different interviews with, and I learned a lot about the business and I found my way into a company that grabbed me. And, you know, pretty soon I was working for an agency, handling a professional sports team for them.
Yeah.
And writing the marketing plan for the board, the ownership board of the NHL to bring their TV contracts to parity with the NBA.
Interesting. So very interesting. You didn't check their boxes initially.
No.
Yeah, you were a slam dunk for them. And isn't it amazing that in this world, right, that whether it be companies that are hiring or people that are selecting to have certain relationships, we have this checkbox. And we have this checkbox, like you and I were talking earlier as well, is you miss out on these amazing people and you are a slam dunk for them. And they didn't think that you were the right one because of the degree, or they asked you those questions.
Right. You know? Didn't take the traditional path.
Right. And what is really the traditional path? We're always evolving, aren't we?
Yeah. It's nice. The traditional path, there was a lot of people along the way that were really stuck in patterns that they couldn't find their way out of.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so in some ways I didn't have those barriers. I didn't accept those barriers. Mm. And then, you know, Elaine, I went on for the next 13 years, I had my own marketing company. So tons of projects from, you know, 13 professional sports team logos, the opening, grand opening and launch of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum, just like a lot of really fun stuff.
Yeah.
You know, high profile retail branded products and, you know, so environments inside stores. And then, one of my clients, I was helping with marketing and he had this little technology thing and we went out and got a really big contract for him helped him pitch it and everything else. Learned a lot about the technology. Told him, I think we can go get some venture capital with pretty much the same presentation. And then, so right around the year 2000, I ended up the founder of a small technology startup, a unified communications Beautiful. Company.
Amazing.
So a year later, I'm on the stage in London as a keynote speaker at a messaging conference. And, you know, I 6 months before that, I couldn't even read through the magazine, technology magazine, with all the acronyms and everything.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And I fell in love with technology.
Yeah.
And then the internet bubble crashed, right? And so all the funding dried up, and I went and found a bunch of companies that were in need or in trouble. I helped them get their product kind of positioned correctly and then sold off.
Yeah.
So I helped a couple of companies through that, you know, downtime.
Yeah. And then, there is that possibility in downtime to still take it as an opportunity, and you sought that out for them and for yourself, but as a whole. Yeah.
And then I went on to do 5 mergers and acquisitions and kind of became that change person.
Yeah.
So I've always seen things a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, when companies come together, like an acquisition, everybody's kind of in chaos, right? There's a lot of fear and doubt.
Yeah.
And so I get dropped in to these big teams with, you know, many, many tens of millions of dollar P&L responsibility. And those people automatically don't like you. They don't like what's going on. You're the new boss that gets thrown in. They don't believe you. They don't trust you. And so I allowed people to have that space. Like, I didn't command that they learn or accept me, or I never did the, you know, hey, you got to get on the bus, get the right people on the bus. And I just said, hey, here's the bus route. I'm going to come around. Like, you know, this is the cadence. This is the rhythm. You just peek your head and check it out. Whenever you feel like it's good for you, jump on, but ask some questions along the way. Yeah. Here's the way I'm going to approach business. And they thought, you know, that's not right. That nobody does business like that. But eventually, in their own time frame, they came to understand it was real. And then when they engaged fully.
Right.
And then they killed it. Like, they hit it out of the park, right? My teams made me look good. I didn't have to be very good. I just had to allow them to be really good.
Right. Yeah. And you weren't afraid to allow them to be their greatness. I think there's a lot of leaders that fear the people that they hire or the people that they have around them, like, elevating to an extent because they think it might take them over or it might overshadow. And actually it floats everybody up, like you're saying. Yeah.
You know, I just get to go be the barrier remover.
Beautiful. It's
like, what do you think is the big challenge for this? Well, I see it being this and this. So let's just get clear on, you know, what can we do to remove those things? What would you have me do?
Yeah.
You know, block the information coming from the top so you don't feel that pressure. Great. I'll hold that.
Yeah.
Create that space for you. Remove that client barrier. Yes. I would tell my teams, I would come into town and, you know, managers come into town. They say, you know, take me to 3 clients and, right, make sure you vacuum your car. We're going to see what kind of presentation you make.
Right.
All that really silly stuff. And I would say, I'm going to come to town. You know, if you have a client that you would like to meet with, and you can use me, that would be great.
Yeah.
If not, we'll spend time together. We can talk about your family if you want to.
Yeah. Who are you?
Well, eventually
I have a question inside of that, actually, because I see you showing up as a leader and then they're rising to be leaders in that space. What was in your mindset in those moments? Like, what, you might not have been thinking about it, but if you look at that moment, like, what was your mindset in terms of that moment, not being the dominator forcer of, you need to have your car and giving them all the instructions? Like, who were you being in that moment, mindset and action-wise?
A support for them. So, you know, and there's self-belief in that too. I mean, I don't want to, I believe that I could get things done, right? I had the belief that I could go in there and meet with the clients and get done what we had to get done, or But they could do it better. It was their market. It was their relationships.
Yeah.
So how do I help them become better?
Yeah.
You know, walking out of one of those meetings with the CEO after, you know, this is a very senior person that had run the St. Louis market for quite a while. And we walked out of one of their big clients and he said, "I'm so reluctant to take bosses in, Mike. You know, they've just taken a dump in front of my clients so many times that, and they've transitioned and he said, but you know, let's do it. I'll trust you with this." And
yep.
Went in there. And so at the end of the conversation, he said, is there anything else that you need to know? And it's like, yeah, I'm really curious. What can I do to help this person? I won't use his name.
Yeah.
To help this person, you know, be the best service he can be for you. That was the only question.
Yeah.
Not what can you do as a client? I didn't put any demands on, but what can I do to make this company get out of this person's way so he can be his best for you?
Right.
And they're both like, that was the best question ever asked.
Because it doesn't get asked and it doesn't get offered like that. Right. It's I hear you coming in as this, like servant leadership, right, is coming in as you are very intentional about the whole succeeding, not saying who's right, who's wrong, what's going on over here. It's saying, and your part in it by empowering both your employee as well as the client to be leaders and say, how can I be a part of this team?
Yeah.
And how can I show up for you through them or vice versa, whatever, and empowering it. And I think that's something that early leadership, even longer leadership, forget or aren't accustomed to showing up that way, which actually leaves them at a disadvantage, I think.
Yeah. And we've seen this many times, right? And you're in those conversations all the time.
Always.
pardon me.
That's okay.
It's almost like we're still trying to figure out how business works, right?
Yeah.
We believe that there's this orchestration, there's this process, or there's this math equation that we just have to go exercise and make it happen. And
yeah,
reality is business isn't that complicated. It's actually pretty easy. We make it really complicated.
Right.
But if we focus on the relationships, it gets really easy, really fast.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, the transaction was going to happen in the relationship between those people and then the support organization around them in the market.
Right.
So if everybody believed that they were empowered to get it done,
right,
that they were in charge of their decisions, that they could ask me for support or contribution.
Right.
You know, just block and create the hole that we can run through, do that, or take the ball and run with it. You tell me which role I play, I'll play the role.
Right. In partnership, it sounds like, and really in partnership as their leader, which is, sounds like it's an oddity, but it's the best way to play the game.
And then how wonderful, because I didn't necessarily have to get into the weeds.
Yeah.
They made the decisions at the level that they needed to make decisions, which saved me from having to jump in and make decisions at that level.
Right.
Which is wonderful.
Right. And didn't you hire them for that?
Yeah.
I know that sounds funny to say that, but this is a perfect point, which is if leadership empowers themselves to be a leader, which is show up authentically in service of, et cetera, and they give that space to the people that they've empowered and employed to be theirs, they actually get to go back to doing what they are meant to do and want to do and love to do. And the employee or the person, whomever works for them, gets to show up in their true space, feel empowered, feel excited, and then the synergy works. And you've given them the actual ability to do the job that you've hired them for versus dictating it, which then puts the load on both people and neither is happy.
Yes.
So, yes. Yeah.
And there's some fun, you know, so the relationships that were developed, and there were, again, you know, five mergers and acquisitions, I inherited all my teams. So I, you know, I made some hires as we went along over the years, but, you know, many of them were, you know, they were, you know, they were adopted teams.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they were forced together. They didn't even know each other.
Interesting.
Prior to coming together. So, you know, getting people from different markets to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Allowing them to, you know, want each other to succeed. And, you know, the whole thing about competing with the person next to you.
Yeah.
Let's compete to win in the market as a team.
Yeah.
You know, not like sharp elbow the person next to you. That doesn't need to happen.
And no.
I learned a lot about that in my marketing year. So I did a lot of program work with General Mills. And what was interesting is they get to their quarterly reviews with a lot of their executives, and they would have to make these big presentations to who's going to move on, who's going to get promoted.
Yeah.
Well, I made like thousands and thousands of dollars off of that internal, you know, badgering competition right. that they did, because they would want to build out these big sets with promotion materials. And, you know, like seriously, each of them had, you know, $5,000 to $8,000 to spend on their big presentation. And, you know, I'd pull together three or four of them and yeah. coordinate those. Probably was
yeah.
like every quarter came around. It's like, oh good. It's the quarterly, you know, kill your neighbor project. Yeah. And it's a windfall for me. This is beautiful.
Right.
It's
right.
idiotic.
Right. But, yeah, true. But you created it in something else, you know? Yeah. You shifted the perspective and created something else out of it. So
I think it was like, what's wrong with these people?
Yeah. Yeah. You said something earlier that I think is interesting, because you talked about the mergers and acquisitions, right? And so you yeah. have these, you know, let's say a company and they're acquiring all these different companies, and all these people that don't know each other are coming together. But isn't right. that, I almost see that, isn't that the way of life? In the way of a company builds, you might network and know people, but when you start to, you know, hire and hire people, these people generally don't know each other. And you're right. bringing them into an organization, and you're needing to align them quickly. You're needing to ensure that they're not razor elbowing each other, and that right. they function immediately as a team where they can trust each other. And that's, I'm not going to say it takes a long time, because I don't think it has to. I think, like you said, business makes it more difficult than it needs to be, even from moment one, hire one, where there's not a lot of, there can be some intentionality around it, but really ensuring, how do I hire the right person? And how do I ensure that when we bring in other people, that they view the leadership as fostering that type of trust and whatnot. What do you think, if you could name a few characteristics, as how did you immediately get those teams to, because I'm sure they all came in with some kind of mindset, right? Of, can I trust them? Can I not? How am I going to work together?
Right.
How did you accelerate that process?
Yeah, you know, it was different in each case, right? Because the dynamics were a little bit different. So this last one I did, I went out to Seattle for 2 years. The team that I adopted was very diverse. It was a Chinese company, and so, you know, most of the group was you know, the basis of the company was Chinese.
Yeah.
Their processes, the way that they operated were very different than, you know, many of the other companies. Certainly yeah. the American company that they merged with, it was very different. So
yeah.
it had to be understanding and respecting both cultures, and not forcing one over the other, but let them learn and adopt. And, you know, there's a lot of stories to tell. A lot.
Yeah.
Like creating the physical space and inviting them back into it, because
yeah.
the physical space was not welcoming, and the environment and the past leadership was not welcoming. So it was very toxic and very unwelcoming physically and mentally to be in the space. So they all dispersed.
Which makes sense.
So,
Makes sense.
To bring them back in, I spent my evenings recreating the space.
Like right.
Literally going to Home Depot and, you know, buying stuff and saws and putting cabinets around the loose wiring and, you know, turning a storage area into a, like a hotel seating area.
Kind right. of, you know, right.
Remaking the space and then inviting them into the conversations, and one by one, they started opening up. And then I asked them, I said, will you run a 6-week experiment? We're just going to get together once a week and we're just going to tell each other what we're working on this week. Everybody will share. What's your priority? What are you working on? Just so you're, everybody you're working with here,
right.
Unless you can take off and you can go sit out with the client and do whatever you do.
Right.
Give me an hour each week for 6 weeks. And then you can tell me this doesn't work.
Right.
And they did. At the end of it, they asked if they could have a painting party, and now they wanted to paint the walls, clean up, go further.
Right.
Started doing social things together. In the meantime, I went out and met with all 170 billable consultants that were out with a client that thought we were just a payroll company. Nobody had ever met with them before. Now I'm getting them together in the building,
wow.
having, you know, family picnics and introducing all of them to each other.
Right.
So all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're not just saying that.
Yeah.
Actually, you're making this real.
Yeah.
And it wasn't forced. It was always by invitation.
Yeah.
And here's the trick, I believe. And this is a very different thought that I have. And it's very counter-cultural to the trust industry that we've all been told and
yeah,
right. So build trust are two words that cannot go together. It's impossible. There's no building blocks. There's no materials.
Right.
It can't be built once and then you have it. You can't right. coin trust.
Right.
Right. So, and there is like, there's seriously an industry around this, right?
Right.
Like there's ropes courses and there's 3-day retreats you bring your executive team to, right? And you,
yeah,
you do all that silliness,
right?
And it's like you're going to come away, you know, with a tattoo or a necklace or something, and you're going to have trust forever, and right?
I agree.
What you really get is people rolling their eyes on the bus on the way home, and
mm-hmm.
and
they
then
check
they
the box.
Go back to work.
Yeah, they check the box, and they said. I did it, and now I get to go back to being what I was, because it doesn't create sustained transformation.
Right.
You know?
Trust is an outcome. So if you're always putting the right nutrients in, like belief and support,
yeah.
and if you're putting empathy in, and you're creating some psychological safety where people can express who they are,
yeah.
they don't have to show up trying to be like the next person,
yeah.
or trying to be the best imitation of somebody else instead of the very best version of themselves.
Right.
Right. Then we get people continually pouring in those good ingredients, showing up with the yeah. right behaviors and attitudes and honesty.
Right.
So all right. of a sudden there's honesty in the equation, which is a really good oh. indicator of trust.
I mean, just a little indicator.
So what happens
amazing.
Is when you build all that, now the right nutrients are going into the vine.
Right.
Which is creating the grapefruit that is perpetual, growing, harvested. And that's what trust is.
Yeah.
It's the fruit of the vine.
Right.
It's not the vine.
No.
The vine's all the good behaviors that you continually invest.
Right.
Your relationships.
Exactly. The consistency and the authenticity, because you can pretend to give trust. You can pretend to be honest, but what's going to show up is not that authenticity and honesty. And yes. you're going to leadership wonders why their people sometimes don't show up in that space. Well, because there's inauthenticity going on underneath it, which sure. then needs to be dealt with. But I think you hit on such a powerful point that it just trust is something that needs to be owned And then it's not something that you say, oh, I can go out here and I can go out here. It's owned 100%. And the fruits of that consistency, of that authenticity, is what you get to see in terms of the growth and the prosperity and the profitability, but of everybody, right? As a team, you know? So
I think trust comes is, you know, it's created in your next interaction.
Right.
It's reinforced. It's continually reinforced.
Right.
It's experienced. It's not commanded. Right. Nobody's putting their, you know, their hands on their hips and giving you that stern look and saying, you know, trust me, damn it. And
yeah.
It's like, was that a command?
Yeah. Yeah. And some do. It doesn't
some
work.
I'm subservient. I'm giving you an order.
Yes.
Like, okay, that is not the brand of leadership that I believe in, which is why I wrote a book called Believership.
Because
it's actually the superpower beyond leadership.
Agreed.
It's not the forced. It's the choice that creates leadership.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Of self-actualization. Mm-hmm. And we all as me's want self-actualization. And if even with our relationship, if I didn't think that you had my best interest and were self-actualizing me and my truth, not, you know, we wouldn't be here and vice versa, right? Is the true intentionality of belief in both, of the freedom to be who we are and to authentically help each other to be the best that we can be. And in leadership, it's often weighted, it's not quite balanced in that way. And I think it falls to the wayside. I think you were talking before, it falls to the wayside to how much sales are we making per month and what's our marketing look like and whatnot. And actually what needs to be looked at first is how is leadership taking ownership of their believership, of their trust values, of who they are to their people, and then building out how the rest of it happens, because their outcomes aren't going to happen in any of those areas if they're not showing up authentically, like you said, in that way where their employees experience them as having their best interest.
I agree with that. Think of somebody swimming in a pool and you're running alongside the edge of the pool screaming at them, you know, each stroke, how to like make each stroke, and they're about to get to the wall and they have to make that turn, and you're getting in their head and you're telling them, you know, remember this when you make that turn, and you know what I mean? And you know, how many strokes do you take underwater before you, it's like, leave them alone.
Yeah.
Let them swim the race.
Right. Let them enjoy it too.
Yeah. And that's the difference of commanding. Mm. Or coaching. So prior to the race or in the weeks leading up to the race, the preparation, do we understand, you know, your regular times on the laps? Do we understand what the objectives are?
Right.
Do you believe in them? Do you want them?
Yeah.
What are the barriers?
That second point that you made, do you want them?
Want them.
Is like... is a concept, is really like, let's stick on that for just one moment. Is a leader actually saying to some, is setting up the boundaries or setting up the game plan, and then literally looking at their person and saying, do you want them? Do you identify? Right. Is magic, you know? And I hear you talk all the time about it, and I think, wow, it's magic how he runs in his personal life and business life. And you're the same. You really are there for the other person and saying, well, we're in this together. I can't just tell you what to do. This is what I'm thinking. And what about you? And I think that's a huge aspect for leaders that they can take on.
You know, thank you very much for that. And I didn't want to let this point go by either. So we're just getting to know each other, right?
Yeah.
And I already, like, why this conversation is so much fun is I already know we're going to have many more.
Yes.
And I'm going to learn a lot from you.
Yeah. Vice versa.
And so I get to grow along the path with you.
Yeah.
We get to take strides together.
Yeah.
Just in support. And
yes.
It's so much fun believing in and engaging in a relationship like that.
Yep. Exactly.
And now when we're put in a situation where we have that interdependency, in a work environment as part of a team, no matter what our role is, approaching it with that intent.
Yes.
Creates the energy we need to actually cross the finish line. And we don't have to, you know, totally spend ourselves along the way.
Right.
If we actually create the right environments with our teams, we might breeze across that finish line with, you know, still refreshed. It's like, what do you mean stop? I'm like, right. We can keep going.
Right.
Instead of, you know, the way it's set up now is we're going to push and force you to the mm-hmm. objective we set for you. And you're going to die at the end of it because that's what always happens.
Right. Right.
It's like, oh no, here's the thing is we're going to get our breathing right. We're going to do some energy management. We're going to draft behind each other.
Right.
We're going to get 90% of you across the finish line smiling.
Right. Right. I love that you said that. True. We will cross, we will be huffing and puffing, but smiling as well.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I think this is a great, great moment for, this is perfect because you talked about changing history and we've talked about that, right? Is that generation after generation, leadership, businesses, et cetera, do a lot of the same things over and over again and create it as if it needs to be hard and more difficult. Or they take the perspective of business is important, but it's the people that are going to actually make or break your business.
Yes.
Right. And so if you had, let's say these parting words of wisdom, if you had, you know, a couple of minutes to tell, whether it be the new leaders at one or the leaders at 50 or people within organizations, what can they do differently to change history, to not be part of that 10% of companies that fail? If you had that moment in that elevator or walking down the street, what would you tell them?
Change the mold. Break the containers.
Yeah.
And allow the people that others are following, promote those people. Don't promote people into some ideology or some idyllic pattern.
Yeah.
That we've placed and said, this is a leader, right? Because, you know, if you want better leadership, stop promoting the assholes. It's like, that's a really good place to start. And if we want the diversity and inclusion, which we absolutely need,
100%,
allow it to happen. Don't try to orchestrate it. We're not good at orchestrating.
Right, right.
When you break the containers and you stop trying to mold people, you'll get the best people stepping forward. You get the best people rising. If you allow them to, you don't have to make it happen.
Right. I agree.
So
I love
be open-minded.
Yeah.
Change the expectation.
Like
I say is, you know, don't use the same cookie cutter.
Agreed. Well, it obviously hasn't been working. You
know, square-shouldered, straight-legged thing. There's not much room for breasts or hips in there.
Right.
And we decide that we only want to roll out sugar cookies.
Right. So
I would say is use a different cookie cutter and change out the dough.
Exactly. And
I think your world will become better really quickly.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I agree 100% because I watch these businesses generation after generation, they struggle. And I think, wow, let's learn from the people of the past who have made it now or not made it now, but let's look and break the mold. You brought up a Steve Jobs, and it's interesting because I say to people all the time, if I say the word Apple, what do you think about? Not the Apple that you eat anymore. It's the phone. If I said, what's an Apple? Someone would hand up, like, well, do you mean the phone or do you mean the Apple? He made something that was many, many, many years, hundreds and thousands of years, something into something else. And so you can certainly break the mold of anything. And so I think it's very much true is, like you said, you don't have to fit in a box. And you shouldn't, actually, because that's not leadership. Leadership does not say, I'm going to fit into this box and I'm going to, you know, create this, or I'm going to put my people into a box. You allow yourself and your people and anyone around you in your life to really be their true, authentic selves. And they're not meant for you. You wish them well along their way.
Right.
That's a big one.
You know, it's not an everybody, because it's choice.
Yeah.
And when you allow it, when you allow people to have the choice, they'll make the right choice in themselves.
Yes.
And it's not about saving everybody, because some of those people you want to get them into a position where they can best succeed.
Right.
And exactly. It may not be, you know, where they are. We're going to see a change is going to be, you know, more rapid and yeah. more significant than we've ever seen it before.
Yep.
We're in a challenge time here that is going to take, many cycles to step out of and through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to be a lot of turmoil through that. There'll be a lot of roll-ups. There'll be a lot of people searching. And, you know, I think those leaders, those companies that can demonstrate the care and compassion for others and mm-hmm. And allow people to invest their personalities, invest their soul, their heart
yeah.
into what they're doing, those people will, they'll perform against the outcomes, which is true performance.
100%.
Not perform against the tasks, which we can measure, right? It's
yep.
It's just like, oh, they jumped a hurdle, they jumped a hurdle, they jumped right. a hurdle. And that's right. how we've set up our measurements, right? And
right.
we want to say is, do you believe you'll get through those outcomes? And they'll say, yes.
Yeah.
What makes you believe that? Because I won't quit until I get there. Right. So they're going to show that determination, that resilience.
Right.
We don't have to say, you know, what testing facility did you come through? Can you, you know, how high do you jump? Can you jump, you know, right. every 3 seconds? Can, like, we measure the wrong stuff.
Right. We do, very much so. And through moments of challenge in the world, you'll know who follows you. And if you're not followed anywhere, there's something happening, right? And so if you're a leader where no one follows you anywhere, or you don't have, wow, it hits the fan, and wow, no one's behind me, like no one's sticking around, right. there's obviously something going on where you're focused on self too much. You can be focused on self, but I think the leadership that is all-inclusive, that carries the team and that empowers the team through ups, downs, all arounds, no matter what the economy is doing, and there's going to be some shakeouts. But like you're saying, you're going to find those people who are like-minded, like-cultured, and see you as the leader who has their back and will do everything possible that you can to ensure their well-being. Because that's what people want. They want to know, like, the trust and the believership, you know? So they want to believe in their leaders. Like, people want to believe in their leaders, but if their leaders don't show that they believe in them to own their life, to own the work, to anything, they're not going to follow. And even if they stay in the company, they're not going to perform at the rate that you think they are, because they have the degree or they check the boxes for skills. If the culture is not aligned,
yes,
it's not going to work. So,
and that's, you know, people have tremendous success because others did a lot of work along with them toward the same goal on yeah. their behalf. Right. And that's why, you know, that's why the leaders that really succeed had a lot of other people believing in them.
Agreed.
Even if they weren't the perfect characterization of a leader.
Yes.
Right? They believed in the product, the mission. They believed that they were going to accomplish what they set out to do.
Yeah.
And they did it together.
Yeah, together. That's the word. They didn't step on people to get there. They didn't box out people to get there. They did it together.
Right.
I agree. I think that's a great point to kind of end on there in terms of what that looks like for this audience, but just for the world in general, let's say. Businesses, leaders, humans in general. If we do this together and we see each other as a team and we believe that, instead of believing people are out there and they don't have my best interest, believing that they do and coming to them with your belief of them already and watch how instant, like us, we haven't known each other for very long at all, but
right.
I mean, the reason I wanted you here, because immediately I got your belief in me and how you showed up to me and your words to me and your actions to me. And I said, this is the kind of person I want in my life. And I also want to share with the world. And, you know, it benefits to have people in your life that believe in you, but you got to show up to others like that. And to that point, I think that's a great point. Even to my best ability, I do them and I can make the impact and I can see the shift, but I still reach out to that other human and I still reach out to other humans because we can't all know everything. And I think that's something with leaders, we try to do it all.
Right.
Yet to have that humility and that honesty with ourselves, that to reach out, whether it be hiring a coach, getting a mentor, reading these different materials, really helps us bring those blind spots, brings our truth and power out, and helps us evolve quicker and not have to repeat history so much, which
I love that you're saying that. It's such, you know, well, it's such great advice, right? To what I'm hearing you say, and it's so powerful, is you find that person that will hold the mirror up for you.
Yeah.
Those relationships are important. And
yeah.
And the really strong leaders we know will allow the people they work with to be that mirror for them.
100%.
So we come, you know, sit after we've expressed what we're looking for in a meeting and look at our team and say, is this helpful for you at all?
Exactly.
That's it.
Right.
And then be prepared that, yeah, but there's some other things I need, or yes, it is. I get it. I don't agree with it, but I'll do it.
You
know where people are.
Right. Great leaders give and receive communication and actually take it in. I agree. Leadership is not one way, you know? Well, a lot of them act that way. It's this way. And it's actually a free flow communication of authenticity and openness where even if someone says, hey, I didn't really like how you did that. I felt stifled. Okay. Tell me about that. You know, what can I do in that space? And without taking it personally and like a jab to you, is more, how do we evolve? We're different humans. There's no one person that's the same. We can all grow from those moments. So I love that you said that. I love it. So
it's going to be fun because I do believe in you. I think that what you're doing here is a great gift that you're sharing out.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, I think I get a sense of your vision.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're already contributing to people's lives so well.
Thank you.
But knowing that that soul journey and really stepping into our full lives with belief in ourselves, which takes courage and understanding and vulnerability to get there.
Yes.
You know, whatever I can do to support that action and that vision, because it's going to open up people's lives. And, and I think the world becomes a really wonderful place when we're allowing everybody to be the best they can be.
Yes.
100%. Instead of becoming some version of what we're telling them to be.
Right. Yeah, 100%. I mean, no one wants to be told how to be.
Right.
And so if we get that no one wants to be told how to be, then we have the choice of either continue to do that or to be open and say, wow, they're different than me. How does that benefit both of us? Like, how can we both, you know, grow through that? So yeah, the soul journey aspect is everyone has theirs and we're all here for each other, you know? And why don't we just come together? We see everyone as a team, see everyone as someone to have gratitude for and to believe in, whether or not we travel for a moment or a lifetime, a few years, have that belief in people before you don't. And profitability, which doesn't have to just mean, oh, we made millions of dollars in a company. Profitability is this connection and what we do in life. And that's actually the gold for life. But in business, I think that needs to be raised to the top like you are really the foam on top of the goodness underneath is really, you know, that belief. Coming to business with that versus waiting until later and hoping that it works out. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
I this is so much fun. Thank you for inviting me in.
Oh, you're welcome. This was great. I love it. We have so much so many more hours and so much more to share, and we're going to share again. So, but yeah, I want to thank you so much. And so I'll sign off for everyone here. And I just wanted to say thank you for joining myself and Mike, and you know, go check him out. I go geek out on him online, and I read what he's about, and let it infuse inside of you, and let it challenge you. When I read online about you, not as challenging me in a negative way, it's challenged me to go open my eyes and step up and into the truth of what's going on in business, in the world, in every kind of shift. So go check out my go geek out on him online. Go find him. If you have a business, go have a conversation. You'll be happy that you did, and you won't have to repeat history like a lot of companies do. So, you know, let's yay for that. So, but yeah, thank you so much. And I'm sure we'll be doing more of this. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Yes. Thank you for inviting me in with all these wonderful people. And I can't, you know, wait for our next opportunity to take strides together.
Me too. Me too. All right. Thank you.
Thanks,
okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for showing up and listening to the We Leaders podcast. If we said something today that resonated with you, challenged you, had you lean in just that much more, I would love to hear from you. Connect with me directly at weleaderspodcast.com or email me at connect@pendulumglobal.com. And while you're on the website, make sure to download your free gift. We create one new for you every month. With this podcast, we're building a global community of leaders who want to level up, the leaders of the future. This is a movement. If you know somebody who would benefit from this message, this podcast, or the communities and services that we're creating, share this out using the social media buttons on this page. If you'd like to subscribe, then you can get automatic updates of the new podcast episodes by subscribing on the podcast app on your mobile device. We appreciate you showing up. So if you go to your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star review and your authentic feedback and what you want to hear on this podcast, because what this is created for you, by you, so that we can level up together. This is a movement. Join us. Welcome to creating your legacy. Now let's go build history.